To understand this better, it should be noted that just as two things are felt in the breeze, the touch and the whistling or sound, so in this communication of the bridegroom, two things are experienced, knowledge and a feeling of delight. As the feeling of the breeze delights the sense of touch, and its whistling the sense of hearing, so the sentiment of the beloved's attributes are felt and enjoyed by the soul's power of touch, which is in its substance, and the knowledge of these attributes is experienced in its hearing, which is the intellect. It should also be known that the love-stirring breeze is said to come when it wounds in a pleasant way by satisfying the appetite of the one desiring such refreshment, because the sense of touch is then filled with enjoyment and refreshment, and the hearing, through this delectable touch, experiences great pleasure and gratification in the sound and the whistling of the breeze. The delight of hearing is much greater than that of feeling, because the sound in the sense of hearing is more spiritual, or better, it more closely approaches the spiritual than does feeling. Consequently, the delight of hearing is more spiritual than that of feeling. Since this touch of God gives intense satisfaction and enjoyment to the substance of the soul and gently fulfills her desire for this union, she calls this union or these touches love-stirring breezes. As we have said, the beloved's attributes are lovingly and sweetly communicated in this breeze, and from it the intellect receives the knowledge or whistling. She calls the knowledge a whistling, because just as the whistling of the breeze pierces deeply into the hearing organ, so this most supple and delicate knowledge penetrates with wonderful savourness into the innermost part of the substance of the soul, and the delight is greater than all others. The reason for the delight is that the already understood substance, stripped of accidents and phantasms, is bestowed. For this knowledge is given to the intellect, which philosophers call the passive or the possible intellect, and the intellect receives it passively without any efforts of its own. This knowing is the soul's main delight, because it is pertinent to the intellect, and as theologians say, fruition, the vision of God, is proper to the intellect. Since this whistling refers to the substantial knowledge mentioned, some theologians think our Father Elias saw God in that whistling of the gentle breeze heard on the mount at the mouth of his cave. 3 Kings 19. Scripture calls it the whistling of the gentle breeze, because knowledge was begotten in his intellect from the delicate spiritual communication. The soul calls this knowledge the whistling of love-stirring breezes, because it flows over into the intellect from the loving communication of the beloved's attributes. As a result, she calls the knowledge the whistling of the love-stirring breezes. This divine whistling, which enters through the soul's hearing, is not only, as I have said, the understood substance, but also, an unveiling of truths about the divinity and a revelation of his secrets. When scripture refers to a communication of God which enters by hearing, this communication ordinarily amounts to a manifestation of these naked truths to the intellect, or a revelation of the secrets of God. These are pure spiritual revelations or visions, which are given only to the spirit without the service and the help of the senses. Thus, what is called the communication of God through hearing is very certain and lofty. Accordingly, Saint Paul, in order to declare the height of his revelation, did not say, "He heard secret words which men are not permitted to utter." 2 Corinthians 12:4. It is thought that he saw God there as our father Elias also did in the whistling, since faith, as Saint Paul also says in Romans 10:17, comes through hearing. So too, that which faith tells us, the understood substance, comes from spiritual hearing. The prophet Job indicates this clearly in speaking with God, who revealed himself. "With the hearing of the ear I heard you, and now my eye sees you." Job 42:5. This passage points out clearly that to hear God with the hearing of the soul is to see him with the eye of the passive intellect. Consequently, he does not say, "I heard you with the hearing of my ears," but "of my ear," nor "I saw you with my eyes," but "with my eye," which is the intellect. This hearing of the soul, therefore, is the vision of the intellect. It must not be thought that, because what the soul understands is the naked substance, there is perfect and clear fruition as in heaven. Although the knowledge is stripped of accidents, it is not for this reason clear, but dark, for it is contemplation, which in this life, as Saint Dionysius says, is a ray of darkness. We can say that it is a ray and image of fruition, since it is in the intellect that fruition takes place. This understood substance that the soul calls whistling is equivalent to the eyes I have desired, of which the soul said, when they were being revealed to her, "Withdraw them, beloved," because her senses could not endure them. Because it seems to me that a passage from Job, which confirms a great deal of what I said about this rapture and espousal, is very appropriate, I will refer to it here, even though we may be detained some more, as I will explain its pertinent parts. First, I will cite the entire passage in Latin, and then the reader then render it in the vernacular. Afterwards, I will offer a brief explanation of what interests us. After this, I shall go on with the commentary on the verses of the other stanza. In the book of Job, then, Eliphaz the Temanite speaks in the following way. Truly a hidden word was spoken to me, and my ear, as though by stealth, received the veins of his whisper. In the horror of the nocturnal vision, when sleep usually occupies men, fear and trembling took hold of me, and all my bones were disturbed. And as the spirit passed before me, the hair of my flesh shriveled. There stood one before me whose countenance I knew not, an image before my eyes, and I heard the voice of a gentle wind. Job 4:12-16. The passage contains almost everything we have said about this rapture, from stanza 13, beginning with "Draw them, beloved," up to this point. What Eliphaz the Temanite refers to in saying that a hidden word was spoken to him was given to the soul when, unable to endure it, she said, "Withdraw them, beloved." By saying that, his ear, as though by stealth, received the veins of his whisper, he refers to the naked substance the intellect receives. The veins here denote the interior substance, and the whisper signifies that communication and touch of attributes by which the understood substance is imparted to the intellect. He calls the communication a whisper because it is very gentle, just as the soul calls it love-stirring breezes, because it is lovingly bestowed. He says he received it as though by stealth, because as a stolen article is not one's own, so that secret from a natural viewpoint is foreign to man. For Eliphaz received what did not belong to him naturally. Thus, it was unlawful for him to receive it, just as it was unlawful for Saint Paul to disclose the secret words he heard. Hence the other prophet twice declared, "My secret for myself," Isaiah 24:16. In saying that in the horror of the nocturnal vision, when sleep usually occupies men, fear and trembling took hold of him, he refers to the fear and trembling naturally caused in the soul by that rapturous communication, unendurable to nature, in the imparting of God's Spirit. The prophet here indicates that just as men are oppressed and frightened by the vision they call a nightmare, which occurs when they are about to sleep, at that moment between sleeping and waking, the point at which sleep begins. So at that time of this spiritual transport, between the sleep of natural ignorance and the wakefulness of supernatural knowledge, which is the beginning of the rapture or ecstasy, the communication of a spiritual vision gives rise to this fear and trembling. He adds that all his bones were terrified or disturbed, which amounts to saying that they were shaken and dislocated. He refers here to this great disjuncture of the bones, which we said they suffer at this time. Daniel clearly indicates this when he says upon his vision of the angel, "Lord, upon seeing you, the joints of my bones are loosed." Daniel 10:16. And in what he says next, that is, "And as the spirit passed before me, by making my spirit pass beyond its natural limits and ways through the rapture we have mentioned, the hair of my flesh shriveled," he attests to our teaching concerning the body that in this transport, as in death, it remains frozen and the flesh stiff. And continuing, "There stood before me one whose countenance I knew not, an image before my eyes. He who stood before me was God, who communicated himself in the manner mentioned." And he says that he did not know his countenance, to signify that in such a communication and vision, even though most sublime, the countenance and essence of God is neither known nor seen. Yet he says that it was an image before his eyes, because that knowledge of the hidden word was most high, like an image and trace of God. But he does not refer to the essential vision of God. Then he concludes saying, "And I heard the voice of a gentle wind." This voice of the gentle wind refers to the whistling of love-stirring breezes, which the soul says is her beloved. Must not be thought that these visits are always accompanied by natural tremblings and torments, for as we said, these are found only in those who are beginning to enter the state of illumination and perfection, and this kind of communication in others, they are very gentle. The commentary continues, "The tranquil night. In this spiritual sleep in the bosom of the beloved, the soul possesses and relishes all the tranquility, rest, and quietude of the peaceful night, and she receives in God, together with this peace, a fathomless and obscure divine knowledge. As a result, she says that her beloved is a tranquil night to her. At the time of the rising dawn." Yet she does not say that the tranquil night is equivalent to a dark night, but rather it is like the night that has reached the time of the rising dawn. This quietude and tranquility in God is not entirely obscure to the soul, as is the dark night, but it is a tranquility and quietude